Okay, happy to be here. So, Om Ganah Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmeritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who has so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, for those of you who didn't meet me before, my name is Birkrishna Goswami. Maybe there's some people who haven't seen me before. What? Yeah, I want you to introduce those devotees who I haven't met.
Right. So, Hare Krishna. First of all, we welcome and thank all the devotees for coming out for the special event. And on Thursday, weekday, we are here because we are having very good fortune of having His Holiness Birkrishna Goswami Maharaj, first time ever, in ISKCON of Richmond. So Maharaj is a disciple of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. And Maharaj joined International Society for Krishna Consciousness back in 1969.
No, 71.
71.
By 69, I came in contact with Prabhupada.
Came in contact with devotees, and in 1971, Maharaj joined ISKCON in Gainesville. And then in just a matter of a few years, Maharaj got initiated and also took the mission of Srila Prabhupada with heart. And in 1978, Maharaj took the sannyas initiation. And since then, Maharaj is serving Srila Prabhupada and this movement in various capacities. Maharaj is officially our governing body commissioner, GBC of this area, southeast of America. And also Maharaj is GBC of Fiji and different parts of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Maharaj is also building a nice temple in North Carolina. They already have a very beautiful temple. Maharaj started that project in 1982. Very beautiful temple if you have visited there. And now they're building even bigger and more beautiful temple. And also building a nice temple in Govardhan. And then these are just a few of the projects Maharaj is working on. Maharaj is also a counselor on conflict resolution and then also on the health issues of the devotees throughout our community. And this is the first time Maharaj is visiting us. We are very, very happy and grateful, and we welcome Maharaj by very loudly chanting. Schedule for Maharaj. We were trying to get Maharaj, you know, in his very short schedule, but Maharaj agreed on coming just for a day, but it was a very, very happy thing for us. And Maharaj will be preparing our consciousness because we have a grand festival coming. Maharaj will be giving. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Thank you very much. So, I guess I was asked to prepare everyone's consciousness for Janmashtami. So, thank you very much. Thank Krishna. So we're basically going to speak tonight about, I guess, the purpose of the Lord's Advent. Because with Janmasmi, you'll probably hear more of the stories of the Lord's Advent, like the stories of Vasudev, Devaki, and of course our friend Kamsa. So we're going to talk more about the purpose and also the purpose of Krishna killing the demons. Because that's always an interesting subject matter, the demons. Sometimes demons are more interesting than devotees. There's more spice. So as far as the purpose of Krishna appearing in this world, we have Krishna's own statement that delineates one of his purposes. And that statement is in the Bhagavad Gita, of course. Prichanaya sadunam vinashaya chadushkutam. That Krishna comes to establish religious principles, annihilate the miscreants, save the devotees, etc. However, as His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada comments, those purposes can be served by other persons or even Krishna's energies. Krishna's energies, for example, you have Durga Devi, who is a devotee of Krishna. She's Vaishnavi. She's in charge of the material energy, and she's killing everybody. So she can certainly kill the demons. She's certainly capable of doing that. And the time factor, as Krishna illustrates in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Kalo asmi mitru sarva parashchaham. indicates that the time factor is killing everybody. So really, Krishna doesn't have to come to annihilate the miscreants and establish religious principles. Establishing religious principles can be done by Krishna's devotees. Just like we have our disciplic succession, Evam Parampara Praptam Imam Raja Sheho Vidahu, and you see the present representative or representatives of Prabhupada and his representatives who are preaching Krishna consciousness, establishing religious principles. So basically, Krishna has his own purposes, which are called the esoteric purposes for coming. Exoteric means what you all know about, you know, Purushanaya Sadhanam, etc. But exoteric means, you know, his own personal purposes. Because if you examine the psychology of Krishna, if you can be Krishna's psychologist, and try to analyze why he does what he does, just like we analyze sometimes people in this world, why they do what they do, and it's usually because their mother didn't treat them properly when they were young, or their father beat them or something. That's why they do certain things. But the reason Krishna does what he does is tied, very much tied in with his aspect of his existence called Swarat. He's independent. So Krishna does what he does and thinks what he thinks, acts the way he acts because of desire to enjoy. That's Krishna's psychology in one word, enjoy. Although we're trying to imitate God, and we want that to be our psychology in one word, enjoy. We have to enjoy, suffer, this is the world of duality. So Krishna does everything, so he comes to this world to enjoy. Now, why would Krishna come to this place to enjoy? Because it's, in my vision, it's not a very enjoyable place. You know, Dukalaya Mashashvatam, where there's a Brahma Bhuvana Loka, from the highest planet to the lowest planet, all our places of misery where birth and death take place. Well, Krishna enjoys something called ras, or in Sanskrit, rasa. In Hindi, it's ras, and in Sanskrit, it's rasa. Rasa means different tastes, different tastes. And we all know about the five basic tastes, you know, the Shantaras, Dasharas, Sakya, Vatsalya, Maturya, rasas. But there's also seven indirect rasas. Rasas like humor, and even rasas like ghastliness, compassion, like that, and chivalry. And these rasas, Krishna can enjoy some of them to the fullest. Let's say ghastliness, for example, only in the material world. Because there's nothing ghastly in the spiritual world. In other words, let's be specific. When you have a fight with someone, it's pretty, in the material world, it's pretty ghastly. Just like you hear about these different terrorist groups that are doing things, it's pretty ghastly. Or, forget about that. Let's even talk about rugby, soccer, hockey. It's pretty ghastly. I mean, if you ever, sometimes I travel, not a lot of times I travel, I go through the airports and there's these sports bars in the airports. And you see, you know, I just look in and see the players doing what they're doing. And I see the people watching them who are drunk, imitating, you know, this is pretty ghastly. Get him, kill him. So that's a ras. Of course, that should not be your primary ras. It's not a But I, you know, I'm sure you all like that sort of, we all like it to a certain extent, you know, like competition. I mean, of course, in India, it's rugby. It's not rugby, it's cricket. Mm-hmm. Cricket. It was like one time I was going around Govardhan Hill, and some of the young boys that were bothering me. And I told them, I said, look, I'm an Australian cricket star, and I pray to Govardhan before the game. And they all offered obeisances to me. And they didn't bother me anymore. They said, oh, please accept, give us your blessings. So that's one of the religions in India, one of the most prominent religions in India. Isn't it? Cricket. It's like a religion. But that's like a ras there. And I'm not saying anything, there's anything wrong with it. But Krishna also has that same type of desire to enjoy the ras. And of course, when Krishna enjoys the ras, it's pure. when we try to enjoy the rasa, let's say, you know, whether it's a conjugal rasa or friendship rasa, there's so many problems there. But Krishna's enjoyment is pure. So there's certain types of rasas or manifestations of certain rasas that can only be enjoyed by Krishna in the material world. Like you see Krishna killing the demons, although he doesn't have to kill the demons. He even arranges for his devotees to come down and take the part of demons, like in the case of Aranyakashipu, Aranyaksha, because that was Jaya and Vijaya. So we can engage in chivalrous affairs with him. And even when he kills them, he doesn't just like come and kill them like that. He plays with them while he's killing them. Like you see, Aranyaksha, Krishna appeared as Lord Boar, and Krishna was just playing and let him get away a little bit, play with him a little more. It sometimes reminds you of the way the cat plays with a rat. That a cat lets the rat get away and he pulls him back and he lets him get away. He's having fun. You know, in a perverted way. The cat is very perverted, obviously. So Krishna does that with the demons. He actually has fun. He arranges for the demons to come down and fight with him to have fun. And another reason, while he's having fun, that he comes down for that couldn't be accomplished by anyone else is that Krishna wants to attract us to his real nature. Because if Krishna didn't come down, we would have to speculate as far as the nature of God. There's this whole theory that people try to criticize religion, and it's called anthropomorphism. They say that people believe in God, and people believe in a God that looks like them. One famous philosopher in the West many, many years ago said, if horses had a God, he would look like a horse. So human beings are sort of projecting their own understanding of personality upon God. So Krishna, in order to avoid that happening, he comes down and shows us what he's actually like. So he's not an anthropomorphic projection. That's a fancy word. He's not a projection of what we think God should look like. You know, just like in the Christian world, sometimes they depict God as an old man with arthritis. There's this place called the Sistine Chapel, and where Michelangelo, who's a great artist, he painted this picture of God reaching out to Adam, and God is just quite an old man, gray hair. But we know that at least Krishna doesn't have any gray hairs. And Krishna is not old. He always remains 16 years of age. Even during the battle of Kurukshetra, he was still a young man. And, of course, his wives also remain young like that, too. Because Krishna has a spiritual body, as described in the Brahma Samhita, that Satchidananda Vigraha, and Adhiradhir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam, that he has a body made of eternally bliss and knowledge. So, therefore, you know, Krishna is always young like that. So, anyway, so Krishna comes down to show us his nature, so we can become attracted and want to go back to Godhead. And as Prabhupada said, in the Krishna consciousness movement, we understand God's name, address, telephone number, and I would add email address. And of course, that's Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So that's another big reason Krishna comes down. So another thing Krishna does that I want to speak about this evening that I found very interesting in regard to his pastimes on this earth planet is not only does he kill the demons, but when he kills the demons, he teaches us a lesson on how to overcome the demons in our own hearts. Now, for those of you who know a little Sanskrit, the demon in your own heart is called an anartha. Anartha means something you don't want in Sanskrit. So these are things like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, fear. There's six primary anarthas that are mentioned. Of course, in modern society, people think they can enjoy by increasing the anarthas, like the increasing the lust. They even have lust pills that you take to become more lusty. And Prabhupada, it was a funny story, Prabhupada was talking about in the 1970s, Prabhupada would say, said that the take these monkeys from Vrindavan, and they would take off the glands, the lusty glands from the monkeys, and transplant them to human beings. I don't know if you know. That's what they did in 1960s. Probably comment on that. And he said, well, he said they are taking a gland from one monkey and putting them on another monkey. In other words, the human being is just as good as worse than a monkey. Because a human being has more capabilities, more intelligence. So that's worse than a monkey. You know, if a monkey acts like a monkey, quite understandable. But if a human being acts like a monkey, that is not understandable. He's worse than an animal. So basically, modern society, I mean, through video games, they're increasing the anger and the fear, whatever. All these different methods they have, use the internet and other technological methods, to sort of increase these anarthas, increase envy. I mean, like you see, if they're going to sell something, they have this thing called Black Friday, we talked about this earlier, where there's a sale and people show up like at midnight and they wait until the store opens, and the people are killing each other. Literally, people have died in Walmart from being pummeled or run over by a shopping cart. So that is modern society. But our business is to fight these enemies. Like oftentimes we think in a mode of passion way that our enemy is someone else. You know, we have other people that we think are enemies interfering with our plans in life, or we're driving down the road, someone cuts us off, and that person's our enemy, or someone says a nasty word to us, and that's our enemy. But the real enemy is us. You know, not us, the soul, but these different things, these different anarthas, lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy. So our business is to get rid of it. Of course, it's one of the stages of devotional service. If you study the progressive stages of devotional service, it begins with Ado, Shraddha, Kritta, Sadhu, Sangha, Gota, Vajana, Kriya, and then Anartha, Navritti, Shat, and then after that, Nishta, Ruchi, etc. And so, Anartha, Navritti means you try to get rid of the Anarthas. So, one thing Krishna does when he's fighting the demons, and that's really what I want to talk about tonight, is he fights demons that represent a particular anartha. And we can learn from that particular demon. So this description is given by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his famous work, Chaitanya Shikshamrita. And he talks about how different demons are related with different anarthas. And of course, the first demon we come in contact with is Kamsa. So, he doesn't mention that Kamsa represents a particular anartha, but he says Kamsa, and this is also from the commentary from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that Kamsa is like the chief materialist, the empiricist, who's the enemy of religion. What do I mean by empiricist? That means a mundane scientist who thinks that everything can be measured, and if it can't be measured, if you can't at least see the effects of it, it doesn't exist. I mean, for example, the scientists talk about how consciousness is an epiphenomena of matter. And how the consciousness comes just from the interactions of the different nerve cells in the brain. And, of course, we understand that not to be true because the brain is a filter of consciousness. It filters what you're perceiving, obviously. And if you have brain damage, then your filter gets damaged and you see things differently or you perceive things differently. But consciousness comes from the soul. Now, in spite of all these different science fiction films where you see the robots developing consciousness, you know, of course, I was very much into science fiction before I joined the movement, and you have computers that start talking to you. I mean, just like now you have this Siri, right? But she has no consciousness. You know, one time I asked Siri, how old are you? And she said, that you don't need to ask or something like that. You know, and then Microsoft has this Cortana. You heard of this before? And so it appears to have consciousness, but there's no conscious being behind it. It's just programmed in a certain way with a knowledge base and everything like that. So it appears like that. But consciousness comes from the soul. That's it. Or as Prabhupada would so succinctly say, life comes from life. Life doesn't come from matter, because in spite of all the different scientific theories, and I studied all these before I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement, they haven't been able to create one cell that's been alive. I mean, they can put together certain things that are already there, but it never comes alive. I mean, they have proto-life, so to speak, or amino acids that they can put together from other amino acids, but they haven't been able to produce it. So that's what Kamsa represents. And he has an innate dislike for anything spiritual. You know, it's just like... And that's basically material, not a spiritual scientist. Prabhupada very much wanted us to address the scientists. And Prabhupada was very proud of Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, who wrote many books about how life comes from life, and also devotee Sataputta Prabhu, who proved mathematically using information theory that life cannot develop by chance. It's virtually impossible. You know, in the whole span of our universe, it's virtually impossible. The possibility is so small that it wouldn't happen. What to speak of evolution? But there's many scientists who, you know, Dawkins and others, who write about these things, and they devote their whole life. Actually, they're more God-conscious than some of us.
Like Kamsa.
Yeah, because they speak more. Yeah, like Kamsa was more Krishna-conscious than most of the devotees in the Krishna-conscious movement. But in the wrong way, not anukula, pratikula, in other words, the wrong way. So that's Kamsa. And then, so the idea is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur say, as soon as a real religion appears, and actually another point is that there's many pseudo-religions too. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 17th chapter, is asked by Arjuna, what is the faith of someone who does not follow scripture? And Krishna answers, his faith depends upon his mode of nature. You know, if he's in the mode of nature, he develops a mode of ignorance. He develops a mode of ignorance faith. You know, he worships the ghosts and the spirits and the mode of passion and the mode of goodness like that. So most of what's happening in the name of religion, even though the founders might have been preaching something pure, has been contaminated by different theologians or what Prabhupada would call mental speculators. So as soon as real religion appears, real religion means what was taught by Krishna, dharmam tasakshat bhagavat pranitam, that dharma is only something that descends from Bhagavad. I can't come up with dharma. Like Prabhupada, sometimes he would be very humorous. He would say, people who are not, quoting from the Bhagavatam, people who don't worship Krishna are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. And Prabhupada said, don't blame me, that's what Krishna says. Prabhupada told us that's the way to preach. You repeat Krishna's words and you say, Krishna says this, and they're getting angry at you, and you say, no, I'm just repeating. Don't kill the messenger. So as soon as real religion appears, then there's an attempt to kill it. And that attempt is represented by our friend Putana. And so what does Putana represent in terms of the Anarthas, which is really interesting? Putana represents the pseudo-guru. Pseudo means false guru. Now that's like a contradiction. Because if someone's a guru, they're not false, but let's just use that terminology right now. And that means someone who's teaching something in the name of religion, or even your own mind that's teaching something in the name of religion, but is not actually coming from this descending process, evam parampara praptam, not from a bona fide guru. I mean, there's so many pseudo-gurus in the world today. We're not just talking about from India. We're talking about every religion in the world. Like when Prabhupada was present, Prabhupada said, talking about some of these gurus who declare themselves to be God, Prabhupada said, practically every week another god is coming from India. And even we had some gods coming from Korea, too. You know, and there was one god from India. He was a 16-year-old boy. And what happened is God had a little spiritual trouble. He ran away with his secretary. And so God's mother got very upset with him, took him to court, and declared, this son is no longer God. And my other son is God. So you had all these funny things happen. So, I mean, of course, that's really ridiculous. So most religions in this world teach about materially how to become better. I mean, in America, that's particularly popular. That they say, well, if you're successful, I mean, if you have God's mercy, you're going to be rich. Even you hear that in India too. You know, a lot of stuff in India, like Sachin Ryan Gata and other things like that, are that the evidence of God's mercy is that you're wealthy. So, but then look at the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, and they had more mercy than anyone else, and they gave up their wealth. They were living Kopina Kanta Shato, just wearing Kopina, and they wouldn't eat that much like that, and so they had more mercy than anyone else. I mean, sometimes people think real mercy, just like that story of the touchstone where someone approached Lord Shiva and he wanted a touchstone, and he went to Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami had that touchstone in the garbage. I'm sure you all know that story. And Sanatana Goswami had it in the garbage, so the man thought, well, he's in the garbage. Ultimately, after he turned his wife to gold, I know. But he turned everything to gold, everything he came in contact with. He understood that there must be something better, and the better is the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, the knowledge coming from disciplic succession. So actually, Putana represents this bogus guru, and so ultimately, because Krishna came down, real religion actually destroys these bogus gurus, and we challenge them. Prabhupada was very much following in the order or the mood of a spiritual master, very much challenging these things. There's an interesting story that once upon a time in Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's ashram, there were two devotees, a brahmachari and a sannyasi. They were going on a preaching mission. And so this was in Bengal. And the brahmachari got up and he challenged, you know, this local, very popular guru in Bengal. And there was practically a riot. The two of them had to run away for their lives. So they both ran back to Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur. And the sannyasi complained about the brahmachari. He said, this brahmachari, he created a riot. He criticized this, you know, the popular guru. And Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur turned around and said, he has done a good job. So Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur was very much into this, like, even cutting technique. I mean, he had etiquette, he had manners when he was presenting it. But just presenting the truth. Like Prabhupada, he never changed anything just for popular opinion. Not to win followers. He depended completely on Krishna. Whatever was the Siddhanta, that means conclusion, or the philosophy, the ultimate conclusion of the philosophy, he presented as it is. And if people wanted to join, that's all right. If people didn't, Prabhupada said, we want some gems, not some dime store imitation jewelry. We want quality, not quantity. So Putana is an interesting personality, very, very interesting personality, because she actually went back to home, back to Godhead. And in her previous life, she had a very interesting birth. She was the sister of Bali Maharaj. And you all know the story of Bali Maharaj? Bali Maharaj had conquered the universe because he was faithful to his guru, Shukracharya, who told him to worship Vishnu. But he told him to worship Vishnu to acquire material things, to become very powerful. So when Vishnu finally appeared, he appeared in the form of Vamandeva. First thing that happened was that Bali Maharaj's sister became attracted to him in a maternal way. She looked at him, because he was young, cute little kid. You know, just a boy. So maternal means like motherly. So she thought, I would really like to have him as a son. Wow, what a son. And then Lord Vamanadeva did what he came to do. He cheated, didn't cheat. I mean, he gave his mercy to Bali Maharaj. Struck out the eye of Shukracharya. And Shukracharya tried to interfere with everything. He took some kusha grass and poked out his eye. And when Bali Maharaj's sister saw that, she said, I may be his mother, but I'm going to kill him. And so next life, she took birth as Putana. And as Putana, she tried to kill Krishna. And she was, of course, unsuccessful. Krishna killed her, but brought her back to home, back to Godhead. So that's one particular thing to avoid, like improper teachers. And we're taught in the Krishna Consciousness Movement, especially if one takes this ISKCON Disciple course, how to identify the qualities of a guru. And it's not simply charisma or something external like that. Basically, it's Samitpani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam, which means a bona fide guru must be a servant of his guru. Samitpani Shrotriyam must have heard nicely from his guru and must be nishta, steady, in devotional service, 24/7. A guru is not a job you hold during the day when you punch out at night. As you go back to your real business, you know, it's 24/7. And, you know, I remember when I applied for that job. No, you don't apply for it. I'm just joking. And this is 24/7. You have to act like the web camera is on you 24 hours a day.
It is for you.
Yeah, I know. And then, so that's the first demon that Krishna killed, this Putana, you know, that is, who represents the false guru, false teachings, teachings of the mind, mental speculation. And the second demon Krishna killed was the Shakatasura demon. And the Shakatasura demon was not actually, he's called the cart demon, but he had a subtle form, and he was residing like either through or near the cart. And we know Krishna killed him when he kicked over the cart. And this demon represents lethargy, laziness, indolence, tendency to put off for tomorrow what you can do today. That's called procrastination. So lethargy and dullness. So these are things we have to conquer. Just like Krishna called Arjuna what in the Gita? As far as a conqueror's sleep. Does anyone know the name? Gudakesh. Gudakesh. Conqueror of sleep. So the sleep means indolence. It means ignorance. So we have to conquer over this sleep. And the Bhagavatam says, it's interesting, it says we conquer over sleep by rising up. Prabhupada, Chanaka Pandit says that one should sleep like a dog sleeps. You know what that means? Does anyone know? Not. That means if you hear a sound, you immediately jump up. Not sleep in ignorance. I remember I was with Prabhupada one time, this was in Mexico City. Prabhupada kept the devotees up really late. There was a program in a place called Cuernavaca, which is near Mexico City. And it was like till midnight, 1 o'clock. And so it came time for Mangalarti. And guess who woke up? Prabhupada was the only one who woke up. Even the pujari didn't wake up. And then Prabhupada just like woke everybody. He was so angry. He said, what's wrong with all of you? And Prabhupada's a perfect example of someone who conquered sleep. And Prabhupada would take rest at like 10 o'clock at night and usually get up at midnight and start writing. And you have Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was even less than that. He would like take rest at like 8, get up at 10 at night and be writing. And you see volumes of literatures were produced by these personalities. So we can't imitate, especially if you're driving a car. Because then you'll start. When I first joined the movement, devotees would naturally fall asleep while they were driving cars. And it was quite dangerous. And I would take rest at red lights. Driving a car and you just take advantage, take a nap until someone honks the horn behind you. So we have to be practical in this regard. So that's Shakatasura. And in his previous life, he's an interesting demon. He was the son of Hiranyaksha named Utkacha. And he broke trees and was cursed by Lomasa Rishi. And he begged for forgiveness, and then he was blessed by the next life. He would be liberated by the touch of the Lord's lotus feet. So you see, another point is, that even when a sage curses you, then you get benefit from that. A sage, because if they're actually a sage, they can control their anger. So, therefore, they're not getting angry just because they're angry, and you've frustrated their attempts. In this mature world, we get angry because someone frustrates us in some way. As Krishna says in the Gita, Jayatovasya, whom some sangostesha vajayate, sangatsan jayate kama, kama krodha vijayate. I think most of you know that verse. From contemplating sense objects, one develops attachment to them. From attachment comes lust, and from lust comes good old anger. So the munis, or the sages, when they curse, like Narada Muni, he cursed Manigriva Nalakuvara, to become twin Arjuna trees, he's thinking of their benefit. You know, what can be done to help them? So the next demon, I'm going to go through the demons rather quickly because I like demons. I mean, I remember joining the Krishna Consciousness Movement, and we would read about these demons every night. The brahmacharis, they'd all sit together drinking milk and just reading about the demons. And I remember Prabhupada, one time in L.A. with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was listening to the story of Shalva and his airplanes. You know this? Anyone's heard the story? This is not one of the Braj pastimes, but Shalva was this, Shalva Raj, he had this airplane that could disappear. And I guess like the modern jets that can't be seen by radar, isn't it? Something like that. Stealth. He had a stealth plane.
Stealth.
Yeah, stealth technology. See, that was existing even before the modern day and age. So it would disappear off of Krishna's radar screen. And so there was a story about Krishna knocked him out of the air. And then Prabhupada was going, look, die, like that. Just like we watch a cricket game or something like that, or a football game. Prabhupada was doing the same with Krishna's pastimes. That's another point. By hearing these pastimes, all these different desires can be fulfilled. I mean, you read the Mahabharata, there's everything there. There's violence, there's romance, there's intrigue, there's demons, like Shakuni. I mean, it's so interesting, isn't it? It's really interesting. So spiritual life doesn't have to be dull like that. Krishna's life is not dull. It's not like people depict God, another religion, just sitting on some throne judging people all day long. That would be a horrible existence, like going to hell, if you just sit and pass judgment all day long and don't get any salary for it. So God's life is very interesting. And if we partake of these pastimes, our life can be very interesting too. Then we won't have any desire to watch sporting games or Bollywood movies or whatever. It's just, what for? It's not interesting. That's called nirapeksha. The devotee becomes disinterested in the things of this world. So, let's talk about the next bag of hot air demon. That's Trinavarta. Trinavarta is the whirlwind demon. And he represents pride that comes from scholarship, too much scholarship, produces bogus philosophies, and one gets into debates and everything like that. Queen Kunti states that several things can actually bewilder us. She says, "Janmaishvarya shrutasya shivir, enamana adapuman." She says, if one has so-called high birth, let's say if you're born in a Brahmin family. Like you see this caste consciousness sometimes in India, and even in the West. I mean, the religion that I was born in, people who were members of the religion considered themselves the chosen people, and everybody else wasn't going back to God. I mean, that's how bad it was. So,
it's still there.
Okay. Janma, so birth, pride and birth. Aishwarya, pride, proud of money, like Manigriva Nalakovera, were proud because they had so much money from their father. Aishwarya, Shrutasya, proud of learning, which is what I just mentioned here. Or Shibir, beauty. You know, so one can become proud of whatever they possess, and this leads to downfall from spiritual life. Mm-hmm. Talking about anarthas, Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, who's another acharya in our sampradaya, he stated that when one performs bhakti, one gets even material opulences sometime that can cause one to fall down. In other words, people start to praise him. For example, let's say you become a guru, then you get a book written about yourself every year. Pretty good, isn't it? I mean, how many people get a book, praising, like a 300-page book, praising themselves every year? I mean, and sometimes I get letters, email letters, please write some praise for our guru, his Vyasa Puja is coming up. I mean, I don't mind that. I like to praise different Vaishnavas. But can you imagine? You get a book about yourself every year, how proud you get? Wow. And then the people tell you have lotus feet. And after a while, you start to look at your own feet. And you learn the yoga posture of putting your feet on your head so you get the dust from your own feet. So that's these are problems. This is, you know, that's like Trinavarta, the pride. Pride in scholarship. Pride in one's bodily beauty. Pride in one's birth. Pride in one's money. All these things we have to be very careful. Of course, Lord Chaitanya says, Janatapi Sunichena. Tadaripi Sahishuna Manina Manadena Kirtaniya Siddhahari. That we can overcome this pride by Manadena, offering respects to others. That is our method. Lord Chaitanya not only says one should be as tolerant as a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, but he also gives us the method to get to that point. He said, offering service to others. Like when Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is offered respects, he would say, Dasosmi, in response. In other words, I'm your servant. So one should always think like that, that I'm a servant of every... If you think you're a servant of everybody, in Krishna, of course, servant of Krishna, and that means you're a servant of everybody, you always remain humble. But unfortunately, we tend to think or identify with our position. You know, for example, like sannyasi or guru or something like that. But if we can give that up, we can experience real ecstasy. I'll give you an example, a practical example of my own life. Recently, I was in Mayapur during the GBC meetings at the beginning of this year. And during the meetings, which are management meetings, not completely the most ecstatic things you can experience, but service to Prabhupada, I found out that a wife of one of my friends was passing away in Mayapur. And so I made a commitment. And she's just a simple, humble devotee. She wasn't like a big GBC or anything like that. I made a commitment to go and read for her every day. Read from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, read from the Bhagavatam every day. And so that, to me, was the most ecstatic experience I had in Mayapur. More ecstatic than going to the temple and dancing, which I like, and certainly more ecstatic than the GBC meetings, that's for sure. But the most ecstatic thing was just serving a simple, humble Vaishnava. Wasn't my disciple, wasn't, you know, godbrother, godsister. She was the disciple of one of my godbrothers. And she eventually, and it was such a wonderful experience because she was smiling the whole time. Most people, when they're getting ready to leave their bodies, they go through these different stages. Like, first of all, denial. No, it's not going to happen. And then they go through a depression or fighting, sometimes different orders like that. You know, real depression, then fights. I'm going to fight against this and win. And finally, after all that time, then there's, you know, you surrender to the idea and you go back to home. But she didn't go through any of these stages. She was just like happy the whole time. Amazing. And she went back to Godhead. And I was fortunate enough to get the mercy of being able to serve her. Simple, humble devotee. I even said to her that when you go to see Krishna, put in a few good words for me. You know, obviously, if you're going to see someone who's going to see Krishna within a few days, you're going to send a message. Because email doesn't work going up there, you know. Just So that was the point. Trinadapi sunichena, torarapi sishna, amanina manadena. So if we can do that in our yatra here, we'll be so successful. In our temple in North Carolina, community in North Carolina, we set up these Vaishnava care groups. Actually, this nice devotee Sangeeta who's inspired us to do that, where in each geographical area, if any devotee has some problem, whether it's financial, whether it's physical, whether it's marital, whatever, then we get a whole group of devotees. It's like a 911. A whole bunch of devotees who rush in to serve that devotee. We recently had a devotee pass away, one of my godbrothers, and there were people with him 24/7, a whole group of devotees 24/7. You know, sometimes you even have to kick all the devotees out because there are so many devotees there. And so that's really what makes a community grow. I mean, this is loving exchanges. What is a friend in need is a friend indeed. So that's how we become the opposite of Trinavarta. Otherwise, we're just bags of hot air, you know, just being proud of who we are. So anyway, so that's Trinavarta. And according to the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, this demon Trinavarta was a king. And he was very proud because he had 1,000 wives. That's all right. I mean, that doesn't make you proud. Usually makes you humble. But anyway, he had usually. I don't know from experience, but anyway. So he had 1,000 wives, but he was enjoying with them, and he appeared naked in front of Durvasa Muni. Now, he's the worst sage to appear naked. You know, you got to do it too in front of Narada or some, or Angira or something like that. And so Durvasa, that means one with a bad temper, actually. Durvasa cursed him to live on earth for 100,000 years and be killed by Krishna. So that's how he actually became Trinavarta. And then, of course, then you have Nala Kuvera Manigriva, which we spoke about before. We don't have to speak again. And they were, of course, that was the false pride due to aristocracy and finances, having a lot of money. Then, here's an interesting one because you got some children here. There's Vatsasura. Vatsasura was a demon, a calf demon. He was a demon who took the shape or form of a calf. And he represents, you know, the childish nature, playful, un-Krishna conscious nature. That doesn't mean the children are like Vatsasuras. You shouldn't say that to your children. You know, you're all Vatsasuras. So, but, you know, sometimes we as adults manifest that particular nature. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur actually gives the methodology how to deal with children in regard to this particular demon. And you'll find this interesting because most of you are parents. He says children are naturally playful, so they shouldn't be stifled, but they should be engaged in Krishna conscious activities, not just restricted. In other words, if you tell a child not to do something, that becomes more attractive. Even an adult, if you say, don't watch this, don't go to that website, and then the adult naturally goes there. And so the idea is that the parents, this is an interesting instruction by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, should find spiritual teachers that are role models for their children. Role models are very important in raising Krishna conscious children, or any type of children. Role model means someone they want to be like when they grow up. And so unfortunately, if they watch Hollywood or Bollywood films, their role models are not the most ideal role models. Or the politicians. I mean, Modi is okay. But the rest of them, you know, I can't stand. But anyway, so they're not really ideal. So we need saints, and the parents should be role models too. They should be very, very saintly. And of course we have sannyasis, gurus, and Prabhupada as a role model. I mean, that's, I was telling the devotees before, that's really what got me to join the Krishna Conscious Movement. I never wanted to join because I had to shave my head. It took me 2 more years, and the devotees also preached very heavily to me. But when I saw Prabhupada, I thought, that's what I want to be like when I get older. You know, I was only 21. So I thought, when I become an adult, 21 is not an adult. You don't become mature until you're 35, actually. So I want to be like him. And I focused on that and focused on serving Prabhupada. So that's how you deal with children. If they have someone who they really want to emulate, want to copy. And so this is the instruction by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, how to deal with the childish nature, which can be either an impediment or can be help the children advance in Krishna consciousness. So in the Garga Samhita, it's described that this particular demon, Bhatasura, was a demon in his past birth. And he conquered the demons, the demigods in battle, and stole Vashishtha's cow named Nandini. Actually, you see a lot of stories in the Vedic literatures how Nandini gets stolen. I mean, the Vasus did that. And there's so many stories about Nandini. I got the Parshuram story, too. Anyway, so the cow actually cursed Vatsasura. He wasn't Vatsasura, he was Pramila. He says, you were a demon, you should appear as a calf. And so Pramila begged for forgiveness, and Vashishtha said that after taking birth as a calf, you're going to be killed by the Lord. The next demon, let's see, how long do we have? I can go through with a few hours with this. Tell me when I have to stop. 15 more minutes? Okay. We'll say 10 more minutes and take questions. So these are instructive to us. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, these demons actually existed. It's not that they're just like symbolic of something, but they also represent Anarthas. So try to understand that. There's two things going on. They represent Anarthas, and Krishna actually killed them. And he's instructing us, and he's enjoying by killing the demons too. This is his fun game. So a Bakasura, which is like a stork or a big duck, he represents, he's the one, of course, who Krishna bifurcated his beaks. He just pulled them apart like that. He represents duplicity, cunning behavior, and hypocrisy. And this is very important because in Kali Yuga, there's one principle of religion remaining. Does anyone know what that principle is? Truthfulness. There's four principles: cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, and austerity. And they're all gone, basically, except for truthfulness to a certain extent. So hypocrisy means to say one thing and do another thing. Like if you're doing something and you say to your children, I mean, this is a typical thing many years ago, the parents would be smoking cigarettes and they'd say to their children, don't smoke, don't drink. That's hypocrisy. So truthfulness also means to act truthfully, to keep your promises. Promises should always be kept unless the only time you can break a promise is to save someone's life. You know, just like in the Mahabharata, you have this whole interesting theme running through the Mahabharata, that you have people keeping vows, like especially Grandfather Bhishma, and those vows actually led to improper behavior and led to the devastation, disaster. Because Bhishma was so attached to keeping his promise, yet he should have broken his promise. Or you have Yudhisthira, who was so attached to telling the truth, when Krishna told him to say that Ashwatthama is dead, Yudhisthira refused. So in certain cases, you can lie. Only in exceptional cases. The example given in the Mahabharata is once upon a time, there were dacoits, gundas, and they were running after a family to attack them, to kill them. Somehow or other, they wanted to kill them. The family took refuge in a sage's ashram. And the dacoits went to the sage and said, where's this family? And the sage said, they're right in there. Can't tell a lie. And the dacoits killed them all. So in that case, to protect someone's life like that, or uphold dharma. But that is only in specific circumstances. Other than that, devotees should always be known as truth tellers, keeping their promises, making, like Prabhupada was very strong about that point, when devotees didn't keep their vows, Prabhupada was shocked, because Prabhupada came from a high-class culture in India. He never could conceive that people would break a promise. But people do all the time. And nowadays, of course, people always break promises. When people get married, they have prenuptial contracts that, you know, when we get married, when we get divorced, you'll get the dog, I'll get the house. When and if, of course. Because they're planning on breaking the promises. There's so many cheaters nowadays. So this is a symptom of Kali Yuga. And of course, untruthfulness or deceptive behavior is increasing more and more. So we should learn from the Spakasura and actually always keep our word, always tell the truth, and be perfect examples. Like Prabhupada said, we should be perfect ladies and gentlemen. And this way we'll attract people to the Krishna conscious movement. So in the previous life, this particular individual was named Sahotra, and he was a disciple of Durvasa Muni. Durvasa Muni didn't curse them. They were picking lotuses in a celestial lake to offer to Lord Krishna, even for the right purpose. And they were arrested by servants of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva said, well, I'm sorry, I promised Parvati I would curse anyone who took lotuses from the lake. As Parvati had vowed to take 1,000 lotuses from the lake, and there were only 1,000 coming out every day from the lake. And so they had picked the ones that were meant for Parvati, so they had to appear as demons and they would be killed by Krishna and liberated. So even when you're serving Krishna, you don't want to offend Parvati or any other devotee. So maybe one more demon, then we take questions. I love these demons. Or talking about them. So there's Agasura, who's the snake demon. Now, snakes are generally known as envious and, you know, violent, so, and cruel. So he represents cruelty, you know, cruelty to other living entities and envy of other living entities. So this is actually very important, because a devotee is supposed to be compassionate. That's the opposite of cruelty. Compassionate means that you're thinking of what is the best thing you can do for each and every person, which is giving them Krishna consciousness. Vaishnava is called Kripa Sindhu, isn't it? Kripa Sindhu means an ocean of compassion. Or another example, another word for Vaishnava is Ajata Shatru. He whose enemy is never born. In other words, a Vaishnava has no person whom he hates. King Yudhisthira was called Ajata Shatru. And I've stated in the Bhagavatam about the qualities of a Vaishnava, Ajata Shatrava Santa Shatava Sadabhushana. That's come from Lord Kapiladeva's teachings in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So a Vaishnava has no enemies. In other words, he's not envious of anyone. He understands everybody has his own karma, his own quota from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's never cruel even to an insect. Like Srila Prabhupada, one time Prabhupada saw on his flower garland, there was an insect, and he told his servant, his disciple, take him outside, he's hungry, and just put him outside on something that he can eat. So he was so concerned from each and every other living entity. So this Agasura, who represents cruelty, envy, etc., in his previous life, he was Aga, and his son, he was the son of Shankasura. He was very, very attractive and handsome. And he saw the Muni Astavakra. Astavakra is a Muni whose body is like deformed in 8 different ways, Ashta. And he said to the Muni, he started laughing, he says, ooh, you are ugly! And he started to laugh at him, and the sage cursed him to become the ugliest snake on the earth. And then he fell, as demons usually do when they're cursed, they fell at the sage's feet and begged for mercy, so the sage blessed him. He would be delivered by Lord Krishna when Lord Krishna appeared. So we're looking forward to Janmashtami, and we can learn lessons from Janmashtami. Everything, all the information, just will end with this. All the information given in these pastimes or Krishna Katha is meant for application. You know, it's not meant for just like, wow, that's a wonderful pastime. But you apply it to yourself, because you can actually see, if we're introspective, our own qualities in many of these demons. And then apply it to ourselves, work on being introspective, alert, and of course chanting the Lord's holy names, associating with devotees. That is a method to get rid of these anarthas. But chanting with the heart, not just chanting mechanically. Chanting, Prabhupada said, in devotional service is meant to be executed with the subtle body. That means with the heart, with the mind, not just mechanical chanting. Like Prabhupada one time, he was joking. He picked up his japa beads and he chanted. He was making believe he was moving his counter beads down. He said, oh, now I've chanted 16 rounds, now I can do any damn thing. That's not how we chant. We chant to actually please Krishna. We chant, we have a sankalpa when we chant. Well, sankalpa means like an intention or something we're praying to Krishna. Chanting is praying to Krishna. So while you're chanting, you should be thinking of why you're chanting and asking Krishna for something. Like Dhruva Maharaj, of course, he was asking something from Krishna that was material. I'm not advising that. But at least reveal your heart and mind to Krishna and chant with your heart, giving your full attention and heart to Krishna while you're chanting. And that will help get rid of these anarthas. So, any questions or comments? Questions, comments, problems? Yes.
There's a whole hour. You mentioned that everything comes down to, you know, chanting and associating with devotees.
Yeah, serving the Vaishnavas.
Serving the Vaishnavas, and that helps us to introspect. So Maharaj, why it is so hard? I mean, we listen it all the time, every time, but just that chanting, you know, we practicing it for so long, but why it's so hard to focus and to concentrate? And
because our attitude towards Krishna's devotees is not correct. If we have the right attitude, service attitude towards Krishna's devotees, you know, sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarva-shashukhoi, labha-matra, sadhu sangha, sarva-siddhi-hoi, mahat-seva, mahur-vi-muktes, you know, if we're serving Krishna's devotees, then a taste comes. Just like if you're eating your favorite food, what's your favorite food? Pizza?
Pizza,
yeah. It's interesting. That's internationally everyone's favorite food. You could be from China, India, it doesn't matter. So, do you ever like lose consciousness while you're eating pizza? No, I mean, you're just focused. Because you have a taste. You like the taste. I mean, even if I mention it, your salivary glands are probably working right now. It's like, you know, Pavlov, you know. Well, sorry, but so, you know, because you have a taste for it. Or if you're watching, or people watching a cricket game. You know, how many people say, I was really spaced out, I was watching that cricket game. It doesn't happen like that. Or I was eating the pizza or eating whatever you like. So, because you have a taste. How do you get a taste? You get a taste by serving Vaishnavas. By serving the Vaishnavas and avoiding, you know, of course there's a negative side, avoiding the offenses. But we like to express it in a positive way. I mean, sometimes we're talking about the 10 offenses on chanting. Don't blaspheme those devotees who have dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. I usually try to express that in a positive way. I say, serve those devotees who've dedicated their lives to propagating the holy name of the Lord. And in this way, a taste arises. I mean, just like I give that example of Mayapur when I was serving this lady by chanting for her every day and reading for her every day. I mean, I have such a taste for that. And also when I go out and preach and go on book distribution, when I used to go on book distribution 12 hours a day. And, you know, we go out at 8 o'clock to 8 o'clock. But that's that. We go on traveling Sankirtan in a van. We pop out of the van at 8 o'clock. Wasn't much to do besides book distribution. That's the advantage of living in a van. You know, we lived in a van. We just took a bath with a milk jug full of water. And, you know, how much time can you waste in a van straightening it up? So at 8 o'clock in the morning, we were out. And it was so much ecstasy that when we listened to Prabhupada chanting, like I can hear Prabhupada now chanting, it was just like we could hear the spiritual world. The vision became clear. You know, like we talk about Chaito Dharvana Marjanam, Baba Mahadvati Nirvapanam. The heart became cleansed. So that's been my experience, because we were serving Prabhupada and serving other people by bringing them Krishna consciousness. And then when we offend devotees or don't act properly, There's even that story of one of the Goswamis in Vrindavan. I don't remember all the details. That he was in ecstasy. And even when he was in ecstasy, his eyes were closed. Some devotee got upset because, I forget the exact details. And he wasn't even aware of it. Well, who was that again? Was that Rupa Goswami?
Yeah, it was Rupa Goswami. And he saw something in his meditation.
And he was laughing. Yeah, and the guy thought he was laughing at him. Yeah, because he was lame. And then somehow or other his meditation broke because of that. And then he eventually discovered why, and he went back and apologized to the guy. So that's how careful we have to be with the other Vaishnavas. And Vaishnavas are very dear to Krishna. Even a new devotee is very dear. It's described, we offer respects in the mind, even to someone who chants Hare Krishna once. That's what Rupa Goswami tells us. Even one time, we offer respect. And someone is, what to speak of someone who is following the principles and accepts a guru, then we make friendship or serve them. Or we can, even if we have a disrespect, any living entity, even an ant, one should disrespect an ant. So it requires some attention. And if you do that, then you'll have a taste. You'll have such a taste that, like Rupa Goswami says, that you'll beg Krishna for unlimited ears and eyes and, you know, mouths to chant his, that won't be enough. You know, thousands of ears and eyes and mouths. So that's a taste. I mean, Haridas Thakur, how did he chant 3 lakhs of names a day? 3 lakhs of names is almost 192 rounds. That's a lot of rounds. I mean, anybody here ever chant 64 rounds? One person, two, three. So I chant 64 rounds generally on Ekadasi. And it's a lot. It's a lot. I really have to focus my whole day on doing it. You know, I have to start before Mangal Arati, turn off my phone, which is like misery, and then not go on the computer that day for a few hours, you know, not eat so much, and then somehow or other I do it, but 192 rounds, three times. It's incredible. And that means he has a taste for it. You can't do it without having a taste. And so, anyway, so we can get a taste too. The taste is part of our constitutional nature. Because Krishna is there in his names. Nama Chintamani Krishna is Chaitanya Rasa Pura. Any other quick questions?
Krishna,
yeah.
Thank you so much for the wonderful class.
Thank you.
Maharaj, you mentioned there are 4 things. One of that is truthfulness, and the 3 other things are lost in this Kali Yuga.
Yeah.
What were those? Can you touch on those?
Cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, and austerity are the 4. They're considered like the... I'll go slower in a second. They're considered like the legs of the bull. In the Bhagavatam, this is brought out in the story of Kali attacking the bull, who was Dharma. And it says that he cut 3 legs, and the bull was standing on 1 leg urinating. Some of you may remember this particular story. And so, cleanliness... I mean, obviously, who in Kali Yuga is clean? I mean, there's illicit sex, and there's, you know, people are doing so many abominable things. As I travel, I come across so much uncleanliness, and that's the cause of disease, too. If people are clean, there won't be so much disease. And austerity, I mean, austerity basically means doing things that will please the Lord and giving up things that won't please the Lord. Rejecting everything favorable for devotional service and accepting, rejecting everything unfavorable and accepting everything favorable. And mercy, you know, people are killing cows, slaughtering animals. People just don't think about that. Abortion. I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible. If you've ever seen pictures of what happens in a slaughterhouse, you know, there's this website, you know, PETA. You know, people for ethical treatment of animals, and they show pictures of what happens. There's one movie about what an abortion is called, The Silent Scream, and it shows a child just trying to avoid the knife and the vacuum cleaner, you know, suction thing, and he's screaming as he's being killed. And his mouth is open like that. And so people are so cruel in Kali Yuga. And so cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, and austerity are the four principles of religion. And of course, if we follow the four regulative principles, we're more likely to be instituting in our own lives these four principles. It's not absolutely certain, because you can follow four regulated principles and still be cruel to other human beings. But truthfulness is the last one, and truthfulness is destroyed, according to the Bhagavatam, by lying propaganda. Like the politicians. I mean, people are so fed up with lying politicians that many of them are interested in this one politician, I won't mention his name, who tells the truth, but he's completely obnoxious in what he's... You know, he's so obnoxious what he says. He offends everybody, but at least he's telling the truth what he feels. And you know, people are ready to vote for him just because he's at least an honest demon. The other ones are dishonest demons, so they prefer an honest demon to a dishonest demon. So, the politicians, and it's just obnoxious what's happening in society. I mean, you can't trust anybody. I was just telling the devotees one story. I had a friend who had a big business. He wanted to go in the stock market, to list his stock in the stock market. All right. So he employs this firm called Market Makers. You know, the people get him listed on the NASDAQ. So what they did is they did something with his stock. That he gave them some stocks as a payment. Is they pumped up the price real high, sold all their own stocks, and brought his stock down to be like half of a penny now. It's called pump and dump. Anyway, some of you know that stuff. So, and he's just like devastated because he trusted these people. So who can you trust nowadays? It's very difficult to find someone you trust. And actually, Prabhupada, I trust completely Prabhupada, because Prabhupada never changed anything, and he knew the right thing, too. Two things. He knew the right thing, how to help people, and he always spoke the truth. He never lied. Because if someone lies one time, it's broken. You never trust them again. Isn't it? So, any other questions? No? Thank you very much, and I'm happy to visit with everyone here. So, all glorious to His divine grace. Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.